Dara's wife died first, back in October. It was slow, so people said at least he had time to prepare, and prepare the children too, but still. Caoimhe's husband died 2 months later in a car crash during the Christmas holidays. Dara remembered Caoimhe and her husband from his wife's funeral. Caoimhe had worn a light pearl-grey coat, tight at her waist, with a belt of the same fabric. The cut suited her. She had a waist you could span your hands around if you stretched your fingers wide. Dara loved narrow waists and broad Victorian hips, the kind without sharp angles or jutting bones. He couldn't help but notice Caoimhe and the curve of her, even at his own wife's funeral. Dara shook their hands outside the church, standing next to the hearse carrying his wife in her coffin. Caoimhe murmured, "Sorry for your troubles," and Dara asked them to the hotel down by the seafront for sandwiches and tea afterwards, but they had to collect their children from a granny's house, so they didn't. The women had known each other to say hello in the shops, to ask after each other's kids, that sort of thing. They did the same exercise class at the community centre, back when Dara's wife was still trying to lose the baby weight so they could have sex with the lights on again. The fat mammy's class, she had called it. Then Dara's wife got sick and bloated. Her hair fell out and her skin became fragile and transparent, like the thinnest of eggshells. And he convinced himself he was afraid to touch her only for fear he might hurt her. Caoimhe's husband died in a car accident late St. Stephen's night, 64 days later. His car flipped into a stone wall by an old man driving home from the pub too full of drink. Caoimhe's husband was on a work call-out. The old man came fast around a blind corner up on Dolan's Lane near the chicken farm. Some Senegalese farm workers found the crash at dawn and called the guards. Dara heard it was a real mess. He wasn't expected at Caoimhe's husband's funeral, not by anyone. It was a small enough town, so Dara would be asked after, but no one would think it a slight if he wasn't sitting in the church. He wasn't even 40, and a widower now, bringing the kids to school in the morning, past the mammies at the school gate in their puffy coats and skinny jeans, the look on their faces of hearts breaking daily at the sight of him. His sister said you could hear the static crackle of ovaries coming to life as Dara walked past. People thought they were giving him room to grieve, but Dara sensed them watching him everywhere, all the time. He hated knowing he was becoming a project. His own mam said when he was ready, and there was no rush, only he could know when it was time, that her friends had a number of nice ladies he might like to meet. Dara had never been so sexy to the world as when he was bereft. But none of the schoolgate mammies could guess he needed to put his wife's folded nightgown on her pillow every night, just so he could sleep. His evenings were routine. He got the children fed and bathed, homework done, the wash on, and everyone tucked in with stories and goodnight kisses. Only then could he finally pour a fair measure of whiskey in his wife's mug, the one with her name on it the kids bought at Eurostore last Mother's Day. He'd stretch the whiskey out while he made school lunches. His wife had taped notes for him inside the cupboard with details about who liked grapes and who preferred bananas. He knew it all by now, but still checked just so he could trace her handwriting with his fingertip. Dara never let himself drink more, even on Wednesdays when he had the week's ironing to do too. The nightgown was the soft beige one, his favourite. Dara worried the scent of his wife was growing fainter and fainter. He didn't know what he would do once her smell was gone. Caoimhe and Dara ran into each other in the freezer aisle at Supervalue. It was a week after the second funeral, the one for Caoimhe's husband. Quiva drifted around the corner with her trolley, past the end-aisle display of discounted Christmas decorations. Dara was trying to decide between frozen garden peas or sweet corn. Quiva looked a disaster, her eyes ringed dark, hair a tangle in all directions. Dara felt it almost obscene to see her there so publicly lost in her private grief. He bet she wasn't sleeping. He meant to say, "Sorry for your troubles," but what came out was, "Are you sleeping through the night?" "Excuse me?" "Sorry for your troubles." She looked at Dara, slowly recognizing him, remembering. "She's nearly there," Quiva said. "She only wakes once now." "Who?" "The baby. Sorry." "I don't sleep," she said. "Sorry for your troubles, too. Did I already say that?" "You did, at the funeral." "I did. That's good. Some people don't say anything, do they?" "Sorry I wasn't there, at your husband's." She wasn't wearing the nice grey coat with the tapered waist, but one of those horrible, puffy, schoolyard mammy ones that look like recycled sleeping bags. "How are the kids?" Dara asked. "Destroyed." Quiva pulled at a loose wick of skin on the edge of a raw cuticle. Her nail varnish was half picked away. "Yours?" she asked. "Wrecked." Dara's youngest had started wetting the bed again. He didn't really want the frozen garden peas, but he put them in his trolley. He felt silly holding the bag, and it was cold. Quiva ripped her cuticle too high. It started to bleed, and she stuck her finger in her mouth. "Don't," said Dara. He had clean tissues in his coat pocket. He always had tissues and wet wipes handy now. Dara took Quiva's hand. He wrapped the tissue around her finger. They watched for a minute as a stain of blood came through the whiteness, then spoke at the same time. "I think the kids must be wrecked in ways I can't even see yet," he said. "I don't understand the forms," she said. Dara knew the forms she meant. The bereavement grant, now the widowed or surviving civil partner grant, brackets dependent children, the widow's, brackets widowers, contributory pension, the life insurance, the pension scheme, death gratuity for death in service. The priest used to sort everything with a telephone call, but now it's a load of online forms and a low-call number for a call centre somewhere in Sligo. "It's doing my head in," she said. "I didn't even know the difference between a widow and widower until last week. How stupid is that?" The paperwork had been a comfort for Dara. It was soothing, the controlled tidiness and detailed organisation. "Can I help?" he said. "I could call around before the school collection. I'll just need to drop these peas home on the way." "Yes," she said. "Yes, I'd appreciate it, if you don't mind." Quiva pulled her hand back. Dara had been holding the tissue firm and the bleeding had stopped. "But could you not say sorry again, please? I can't stand that word anymore." Quiva's house was still. The baby was at her cousin's and the twins in senior infants for another half hour. It was spotless too, like a showroom. Mammy and my aunties, a different one turns up every day. There's not a germ in the whole place. They were standing at the kitchen island with cups of tea untouched between them. Dara had used the laptop at the dining room table to print off the right forms and checklists. "They take time," he said about the papers. "Get your sister to do them, the one who's the accountant. Call me if you need anything." "Thank you," said Quiva. She fidgeted with her cup and returned to his words from the grocery store. "How wrecked?" she asked. "Because I hate it the baby won't even remember his daddy." Dara hesitated, and then told Quiva a truth he wouldn't say to anyone else. "I'm afraid to find out. What if they think I killed their mammy because I didn't keep her alive? What if they hate me because they loved her more and she died and I didn't? Yes, said Caoimhe simply. I have nightmares, she said, every night. He wants to talk, but I can't understand what he's trying to say because his head went through the windshield and in my dreams he... Dara hated the dreams. His first nightmare was about the shape of his wife's body in the beige nightgown. It was the night she died, and Dara hadn't folded the nightgown up small on her pillow like he did now, but had laid it out on her side of the bed, as if she was still in it. He put extra pillows the long way underneath where her body should be. He wanted to fall asleep, pretending his arm was wrapped around her tight, his legs pushed up against hers. It didn't work. The bloated body his wife hated, tubes draining her everywhere, hair and eyebrows gone, that's what the pillows turned into in his dreams, and he woke screaming, terrifying the children. In her kitchen, Caoimhe was still talking. I wake up half asleep, she said, disgusted at all the blood, but then I wake properly, and I'm so angry because he just disappeared from us, quick as that. Dara and Caoimhe had only the little bit of air between them. Except for their cups of tea, there wasn't even a smudge on the polished surface of the kitchen island. I miss her smell, was all he was able to say, and they stayed quiet, not speaking, for at least half a minute. You look incredibly tired, he said. I'm so sorry. No, she said. You're not going to make me cry. You're not. I have to get the kids in 20 minutes. I can't be at the gate. Sure, look at your wand, the poor old thing, falling apart. She started to cry. I'm sorry, I said sorry, too, but I am sorry. Dara was. Caoimhe's hair still needed to be brushed, but he didn't touch it. His hands went to her waist instead. He splayed his fingers like he wanted to do. He felt the bones of her ribs, the bones at the top of her hips, and all the space in between. Caoimhe moved her own hands over his and held them there. Dara could still recall the heft of Caoimhe's husband's hand on his shoulder that morning as they stood next to the hearse, Dara thanking them for coming to his wife's funeral. The completeness of contact and the firmness then was the same as in Dara's hands now. That October moment, the men shaking hands, Dara's thoughts were of Michael's wife Caoimhe's elegant hips and her slender waist. Now, in the first days of January, with his fingers trying to read the beauty of Caoimhe's ribs, Dara's heart and mind were filled with longing for his wife, Natalia. They stood like this for the longest time. Caoimhe's hands over his, the wetness of tears down his face because he was crying too, their lips motionless and quiet but pressed against each other's. In the silence, they shared their breath, and the bitter ache of touching someone who understood.